This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
It's Philosophy versus Improv. I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, your philosophy yay-sayer today.
And I'm Bill Arnett, your philosophy say-again-sayer? I wouldn't say nay-sayer, that's too much.
Okay, Danny, there's an opening for you.
We have a special guest today.
Would you introduce yourself?
Oh, hello. And I'm Danny, and I am, I guess I'm on Bill's side.
All right, so nobody's going to actually be, so you're both improv yay-sayers. And I mean, I am too. I showed up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know each other? Tell us about your other show.
Yes. Danny and I are colleagues from way back. We actually went to college together in the 90s, the 1990s.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. And had a moderately successful career in the Chicago improv and sketch comedy scene together, and currently launched a humorous podcast, The Maximum Party Zone MPZ Listening Party.
All of those details are correct. I can confirm.
Nothing to embellish, nothing to add, or
I mean, you say modest success. I mean, for a while we ruled Chicago with an iron fist.
In a velvet glove, of course.
And just in one room and on a certain night of the week. But man, did we rule.
Yes.
Anything going in and out of town? Any action had to go through you guys? That you had a firm grip on all the trades, the lingo, the...
Oh, yes. Like the De Medicis and Florence. Florence? Venice?
Sure.
Yes, one of those. We had a fun career together. We optioned a screenplay and we're on the ground floor of an upstart comedy network that failed to launch. Failed. Exploded on the launch pad, and the needs of life, and, well, we're back. We're back now.
All right, so I'm definitely in the minority this time in more than the usual way, and I want to formalize that when we started this podcast, I thought I'm going to bring in a philosophy lesson each time, and recently, out of laziness mostly, but I think the improv ethic soaked into me such that, you know, for months now, especially when we have a guest like this, but even when we don't, I will draw from my vast philosophy resources of doing my podcast for 15 years, being in grad school, being in undergrad, doing all that stuff, teaching the occasional class, but I need something to build on. I need a suggestion from the improv audience. Danny, did you take any philosophy classes? Did you have any particular interests? Anything been on your mind recently? Anything deep sucking down into your skull?
Not particularly. I never took a philosophy class. I meant to, and I can't remember the last philosophy book I read. I guess, I don't know, Socrates, I suppose, counts. It's always something I keep meaning to do and just never get around to doing it.
What's the philosophy of that, Mark?
Well, I think we might have our topic, intentions, plans.
Intentions, okay.
Plans. What role they play in shaping our lives and setting things before us. Danny, are you one of those people that has, oh yeah, I'll get to this thing. I got that book I'm going to write. Here's all my stack of stuff I'm going to do before I die. Or have all those dreams just died?
Is somewhere in between your attitude as you were describing, like, oh yeah, I'm going to get to that, is more of like, oh, I really need to get to that. Like, I feel this urge. I have several books that I have that I keep meaning to get to read, and I just don't get around to doing it. Writing is the same thing, although I'm slightly better at that. I don't consider the idea of, oh yeah, I could die. I could.
I better get on this.
Yeah.
Bill, what about you in terms of your plans? You're spending time doing this podcast with me, so I got to think you don't have too many plans that are too pressing. Or you would say, well, no time for that podcast.
Something I've learned, and it's this whole thing about, like, I have to accept the fact that I'm not going to get everything done. And that every day that passes, every time I do cross something off the list, two more things get added to the list. And I shouldn't beat myself up too much for not getting all the things done. And the other side of it is, and I'm sure you may know this, but I know you've had some musical careers and been involved in artistic ensembles. You like surrounding yourself with people who are doers. I like surrounding myself with people who are doers, who do things. And at the end of the day, something is done. Even if it's a podcast, several podcasts that are not listened to by more than a dozens of people. But it's done. I did something. I added to the world of art. There is something there. Who knows who's going to discover this thing? It could be meaningful to them.
And I think we've touched on before the issue of, is the thing that you're creating lasting or not? And obviously how different that is for improv. Or in my case, as a musician, like how much time I'm going to give to recordings versus gigs. That a gig can be just a pain in the ass. And it can drain. I try to videotape my gigs. So actually, even that, I have a thing that is saved. And if, as recently happened, like the videotape didn't come out, the mix wasn't good. It was just, I'd rather not share this with the world. It's a loss. It's a lost opportunity. In the times where I've been gigging a lot, I don't want to tape every show. Like that doesn't actually add to anything. Having 20 versions of the same set. It's just a matter of like, can I get one that's slightly better than the previous one? Or one that has a new song in it or something. But even that, like, it seems there's something weird looking at it. Like I'm creating products, like especially this podcast, or a lot of people do podcasts that are very time dependent. You know, we're talking about the latest news, like who's going to go back and watch, you know, maybe for historical purposes, but to watch The Daily Show 20 years later, certainly you're not going to do it on a day by day basis. You might find, let's watch the 9/11 episode of The Daily Show, but you're not going to,
yeah,
like one segment. It's a different sort of legacy than this is my album. This is my comedy album. This is something like that.
There's definitely, you talk about that, the evergreen nature of some podcasts versus another. And I know exactly, like I will go through a list of podcasts and sports and news. And after a certain time, if I haven't gotten around to it, it gets deleted. But some things like comedy usually tend to be something that you can listen to anytime. There's no, the other side of it is there's no rush to listen to them. So maybe they get put off and never actually listen to.
You know, Mark, I bet you've probably noticed this either at shows or at rehearsals or things. And this is very much happens in improv shows. It is the moment of creation, the moment of inspiration. And those moments where you, the performer, and you, the audience, are involved in this moment of creation. And that is something that I think is unique to live performance, to improv, to a gig. Not that every gig or every improv show finds that moment. But I have certainly been to some music shows or music concerts. You know, music shows, music concerts, where I feel like the performers discovered something and found something and were able to have fun with it that they weren't planning on. And I think that's a cool thing to be a part of. Have you experienced that, Mark?
Certainly. Every gig is a little different. And this goes into, though, what kind of music you choose to do and what kind of ensemble you wish to have. And right now I'm working with a rather large ensemble, which means it's harder for me to just say, this guitar solo is going to be as long as I decide.
We're just going to jam.
Even with a large group, you can have like, do this until I cue otherwise. But when I was playing with a really small group, when it's just me and a bass player who can really follow me and a percussionist who really doesn't give a shit what I'm doing, can just bounce off what I'm doing very easily, then I could just make up whole new songs on the spot. Not that I would do that generally in a live setting, but yeah, at least vastly reinterpret something. Let's do it a different speed than a lot of the times these things happen by accident. We play something too fast and like, wow, that was a new song, kind of.
Welcome to improv.
Yeah. Totally. You describing that reminds me just of having done shows over the years, like we would do that Armando show, which is such a mishmash of different styles, at least the way it used to be when I was playing. And I didn't exactly love it because so many times just people have different ways of attacking it and you're not on the same page and people are in it for different reasons. Some people, I only want to get laughs, or maybe someone else, oh, I only want to do cool moves, or everyone has different priorities. And that show, whereas if it's a tight group with people you know, then you can jam and do absolutely what you want. Or what it is probably your interests are somewhat aligned. And that's just so much more fun and fulfilling, if that can be said for an improv show.
Or a podcast. There's certainly moments where we riff, right, Mark? Where we find angles, or on the MPZ listening party where we riff and find angles and uniqueness. And it's very alive. It's very, no one knows what's going to happen next because I haven't heard what my partners are going to say, which I know will inspire me and shape where this thing is going. And those are fun moments. And I feel like an audience recognizes when something is truly alive and appreciates it.
Well, and you guys are still early on. So you're establishing these patterns for this podcast. For a while, it was going to be anything can happen. Now we pretty much know what's going to happen that we're going to, you know, actually I'm sort of looking at my watch like, when are we going to start the first improv scene? It's about time. Do you feel like what you've done 20 some episodes now? What is the number?
We just released 14 tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right. So I listened to the first couple and then I jumped ahead to one of the recent ones. And it seemed like maybe you had hit on a formula that it's going to be sort of like my brother and me that I've been listening to in terms of we're going to build these conceptual edifices, you know, that it's going to be like an improv scene, but you're not actually doing an improv scene. You're just saying the ideas that would go into an improv scene and just building those. And it's much faster than actually having to do a scene.
I do like conceptual edifices. I like that turn of phrase, Mark.
Well, I was going to say edify, but I'm not sure which is correct.
It's funny because even talking about structure, like going back to improv, the Herald form, what I call the bare bones is opening three scenes, whatever. Like that's the basic structure. Some people feel like it's very constricting, but then I never look at it like a Bible, like a originalist when it comes to the form. Like it helps you teach feelings for beats and vibes. And then from there, you can just improvise and sometimes go off the structure, having that sort of feel and vibe and knowing how a structure may change by whatever you're doing. But that's what kind of reminds me of.
In the improv world, the long form world, there can be these little forms or structures. And I guess the musical equivalent would be like, oh, you know, it's just a blues riff. It's just a standard blues, the rhythm that everybody knows and anybody who knows music can play along to a blues riff. And if everybody understands that, well, then we can all play a song in that style. And improv, theatrical improv, long form improv has its own Herald being one of these standard blues chord progression kinds of things.
Do you feel like your format is settled that we could, in lieu of doing a first scene, we could improv in the way you guys do on that show?
Okay.
Or are we already doing that basically because you guys just talk and...
Do you want to do the MPZ listening party format? Is that what you're saying?
Is it something we could do in a 4 minute, whatever, 10 minute, 15 minute, something for the next segment? Would it make sense? Or would that just be stealing the idea from your next episode so your co-host doesn't get to be on it?
Yes, Bobby, our triumvirate partner, Bobby, is the kind of thing.
Should I be Bobby? Hi, that's me, Bob.
I don't know.
Me? I'm not. Amazing. Is that, what? Are you here?
He's here.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, that's definite. That, hey, Bobby. What a surprise.
You know, Mark, it's stuff that we've done as well and talked about. This whole idea of like, if we can build a little framework that we all understand, well, then we can take it apart and look at the pieces and see the angles. And that's kind of the thing, some of the segments where it's like, this is something I saw in the news, or this is kind of an idea pitch, an opening pitch kind of idea. I think the motivation is, well, here's something I find interesting, and maybe these other guys will find it interesting as well, and they can voice their interest. They can say what is interesting to them and kind of take it apart in front of everybody. We can kind of do a vivisection of the idea and look at all the pieces and parts.
There was recently an episode where I pitched something that was very, I don't want to say thought out, but it was very thought out. And so there wasn't a lot of room for riffing and adding to what was created. And so as a result, it was kind of a stiff presentation. And I was sort of waiting for the quote unquote magic to happen. And I think we just sort of presented it in a way that magic really couldn't develop and it needed to be opened up a little more.
Well, it seems some of these are just combinations of things. So if I said, hey, let's construct a movie that's a combination of Argyle, the popular rip roaring the TV show The Apprentice. I mean, that seems like a terrible combination to me, but is that the kind of thing that might provide as if the audience had yelled out those things?
Exactly. I haven't seen Argyle. Do I need to see Argyle?
I've seen Argyle. I haven't seen Apprentice.
I haven't seen The Apprentice either, but I know the point. I mean, I get it.
What happens in Argyle?
A hat on a hat on a hat on a hat.
That's what happens in Argyle?
They tried to out-clever themselves or something with that.
It's a TV show. Is Argyle a TV show?
No, it's a film. It's a movie.
It's a film. Okay.
It's highly cinematic in that there are filmic elements of it. There's cinematography involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are stunts. There are actors.
Okay.
Many of whom will be familiar to you. Some of your favorite actors from Breaking Bad, say, from
Dua Lipa. Some of your favorite singers.
Okay. Is there a story to the movie or is it just kind of,
I mean,
artistic noodling? Just kind of.
It's a very overwrought, ridiculous story.
Film school project.
It's like if you watch the Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah.
And they didn't stop taking off their masks to reveal something new. And it was just, there was a fun idea and then it got like strange and then it got strange again. And it's like, you know, there was an interesting, fun idea like three ideas ago. And then that was completely gone. And
I think what is fun about The Apprentice is you have somebody who is an authority telling other people they're doing it wrong. And perhaps it'd be fun. Maybe we can do this scene. Should we just do this? Should we just improvise this thing, Mark? Is that what you want to do? I have an idea.
Sure.
Mark, thanks for coming in. You are one of the finalists here at Film School Overload, America's favorite film school challenge reality show.
And are you saying this? I mean, I'm on the show. I think the people watching the show know what the show is. Is there a reason as you as host are just keep stating the obvious? Do you think people are just flipping channels? Does that actually happen anymore?
That's an amazingly astute observation. And it's that kind of break in the box, breaking the mold that we like here at Film School Challenge. Your last work that you submitted was 3.5 minutes of just a naked butt. And there appeared to be something projected onto that butt.
Breakaway. If I didn't convince the judge that there was a reason that I showed just a naked butt, I'd be cooked. I wouldn't win this competition, but I really want to win this competition. I don't know. Talk to the other guy for a second and let me think about this.
Okay. What do you think? I think just projecting something on a naked butt could be seen as a little derivative. I am aware of art school projects that will show bottoms as a way of displaying, stick it to the man as a way of rejecting society. But is it rejecting enough, you know?
So you just didn't watch long enough, because if you had kept watching, you'd see eventually the butt cheeks separate and it's a mask. And then that mouth opens and then it's a butt, and then those butt cheeks separate and it's a mask, and it sort of turns into this whole, the effect might be so hypnotic that it made you forget that part. Is that what happened? Or you just didn't watch past the first 12 minutes of frozen butt before it gets
that's the level of pretension that we're looking for. Mm. That's the level of pretentiousness that we're looking for.
Okay.
Now, Danny, you submitted your final project as a finalist.
Yeah, I'm mostly into fronts. But hearing this discussion of butts, I'm wondering if maybe I should expand and instead of just focusing on the front part, like what's behind it?
A butt, yeah. Your final project was a pair of genitals with a sign that said millionaire pointing to the genitals. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, again, so impactful, so meaningful. It really got me thinking.
Did you notice that the arrow didn't specifically point to either the testicle portion or the penis portion? It's sort of undefined.
Wow.
Where do you think it's pointing? And it sort of asks each viewer, and everyone gets a different idea from it. At least that's what I was going for.
I think that's going to send shockwaves across America. That's really going to get America talking. I really believe that.
I thought it was a challenge. Was this not a challenge against the semantics of the arrow itself? Because clearly that was not a millionaire. So like, is it really the arrow is pointing back and me, the viewer? Yes, you've got the two things pointing at the genitals, but that couldn't mean what it says literally. So you got to just interpret some different way. I really thought that was pretty cool.
Semantics. Yes. Semantics. That's a big word, isn't it? Semantics.
I considered that before millionaire, I considered using the word semantics and then pointing to the penis.
Well, you know, you will be a small deduction for not including that. But I'm sure when our judges...
Not that I should be talking up my competitor, but isn't every use of a word semantical? So it's sort of implied that there's semantics, right? That you use the word millionaire, it includes a semantic. It's like he didn't put the word in it either, but yet clearly it's involved.
Again, it's this level of meaning depth. That's why you're in the finals. This is why you're in the finals. Okay. This isn't just a flower slowly dying in slow motion time lapse.
That's so.
All right. This
so high school.
Yes. Yeah. We've all seen that a million times.
Yeah.
So I think our judges are going to have a really difficult time deciding this. So what we're going to cut to our...
I just like to add, there's another layer of complexity to my art piece. Mm-hmm. If you notice, the penis is angled in a direction that points back to millionaire.
Wow. Don't say any more. I know exactly what you're trying to say. I know exactly what you're trying to say. Wow.
Is that penis really an arrow? Or again, if the penis is pointing to anyone, despite its shape, it's got the knob that looks like an arrow in the end, but yet it's sort of pointing back to the person, really. When you see a penis, you don't think this is just a disembodied penis. There's a whole human being that is implied.
Yeah. And are they the same as the millionaire or different than?
Hmm.
Is a millionaire's penis different than the millionaire minus the penis?
Is a penis saying you're the millionaire?
Can one leave one's money to one's penis or to someone else's penis? In other words, like say you're a bigot and you have a trans identifying male born child identifying as woman. And you say, if he, because you'd be misgendering, goes ahead with the surgery, I want the money to go where the penis is. I don't want to just write anything into your project, Annie, but it's an obvious question that I was left with from your piece is, can one give money to a penis directly?
I'm going to break in here real fast and say, thank you to ABC Television for agreeing to put this heavy program on primetime television.
It's about time.
It's about damn time to have some bravery to be willing to have this conversation.
The conversation I appreciate, but the fact that they fuzzed out both of our projects pretty much in full, so they're having to just go on our descriptions of them, that seems not very televisual.
I didn't realize they were doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm receiving word now that despite this being the semifinals, the finals, no one is watching. No one is watching.
Does that mean they don't blur it? Or if nobody watches it, is it actually blurred?
Was it ever blurred? If a TV show is censored, but then no one watches, was it ever censored?
I mean, because we know what the projects look like.
I mean, I can see it.
The people who blurred it, who work at the station, saw the project. So I guess that's really everybody involved.
Yeah. I guess no one, censoring is not an act of God.
Why is nobody watching? Are we just opposite?
Is really no one watching?
Are we opposite Magnum PI or something? Is there?
Can I just have a cigarette? Is no one's watching?
Are they going to at least stream it or something?
Okay, I'm seeing the executive producer crying and leaving the studio, saying my career is over. Well, I liked your work, fellas.
What about your mother, Danny?
My mother is recording this episode,
but not watching it. It's like,
I'm pretty sure that I did a cutaway. So I don't think this is being streamed live. I think we don't actually know if people are going to watch this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Who knows how many VCRs are running right now?
Danny, why don't you do a cutaway?
Just so people know, that is my penis. It's not the biggest penis, but I think every, like a snowflake, each penis is different and has something different to say. And if I had used my neighbor's penis, maybe it makes you think about global warming. But that's not my penis. My penis is not about global warming. It's about something else. And I can't define that for you. When I look at my neighbor's penis, I think global warming. But when I look at my own penis, I think of art.
I just wish we knew whose penis it was. I mean, that I had some questions about that, but I understand your insistence on anonymity.
Honestly, as an artist, that's not really important. It just exists. The penis is now separate. It has been castrated from the owner, and now it just exists as this art piece. Like, this is not a cigar. This is not the guy with the apple and the umbrella, that guy.
This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. This ain't no fooling around. Something like that.
You would think people way into the arts would know this name right off the top of our head, but.
Mm-hmm. This is not a pipe.
Magritte?
I can't remember.
Not Magritte? Nope.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Okay. I did go see a
play
of his art.
Well, I have one word to say. Brave. Very brave.
Professor, do you have a cutaway?
Me?
I mean, I know usually people on the show don't, it's the director that says the cutaways, but I just feel like.
Wow. It really hurt my feelings to hear that no one is watching this. But then I realized, of course no one is watching it. It's just too powerful. It's painful. The thought doorways that this program invites people to walk through. We're surrounded by angels, and these angels are all around us. And some angels are dark angels. I don't say demons. I say dark angels. And some angels are white angels. Okay, I'm being edited from my cutaway. I'm sorry.
And that's why I was wondering about white angels.
I'm going to pull the plug on this thing. Right. I'm pulling the plug.
We'll never know which project won.
We'll never know.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. I'm familiar with the patterns that people can get in when you start comparing your life to other people's. Have I accomplished as much as they have? Do other people fundamentally have it together to a greater degree than I do? They say comparison is the thief of joy. Well, therapy can help you focus on what you want
instead of what others have so you can start living your best life. Therapy can help you with positive coping skills, how to set boundaries for what you think it's okay for you to do, what you're willing to put up with. It helps you get out of your own way. So it's not just for people who've experienced major trauma. Anybody can benefit from more self-examination, or more precisely, more constructive self-examination. If you were thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you don't like it, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. So stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/improv today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/improv.
But Mark, you'd mentioned earlier this whole notion of combining things. And what is it about this Argyle thing? And the thing that stuck out to me is pretension. And then what is The Apprentice? And there's this whole idea of people, this contest, you know, this people trying to achieve something. It's like, well, how ridiculous is it to have a pretentious contest, a pretension contest? That was my inspiration pathway.
I always wonder about that word pretension, because like how much pretending need be involved? I mean, you're pretending it's important or something like that.
Do they have the same root? Do pretension and pretend have the same?
One would think.
I just learned that censor and census have the same root.
So when you censor something, you don't know how many it is?
You don't count it.
You don't.
You don't know. There was a guy in ancient Rome who was the censor, who was in charge of running the census, but then their job began to include other things like, are you a citizen or not? Or like, who can or can't vote? And then like their job kept expanding from just counting people to determining who was legitimate and who was illegitimate.
Was there another guy called Cancellus?
Cancellus. Yes. Cancellus culturist.
You are no longer allowed to speak to the public at large.
Huh? Yeah. Wait a minute. Cancellus? Yeah.
I think you just cancel somebody with a knife.
Making fun Latin names. Do you try it, Mark? Make a Latin name for something.
Well, I mean, the ones from Monty Python and the Life of Brian are coming to mind, so I won't.
Certainly.
I won't repeat those because that would be foul and obscene.
Yes. Butix continentia. Yes.
That would be derivativus maximus.
What would you say would be like a philosophy? If I were to pick up the philosophy book, Derivativus Maximus, what's the opening chapter of the philosophy of derivativus?
Anus Randius? Inus Randius? I mean, that's right, very, okay. Quite derivative. I mean, most philosophers are derivative of other philosophers. That's sort of the name of the game. Okay. It's okay.
I was trying to set you up. I was trying to set you up for a Homer there, Mark.
Heidegger mostly ripped off other people. That's okay.
Okay.
But, you know, he was confident about it. Hegel, very, very ripped off Schelling.
Who comes before Socrates? Was there like Egyptian philosophers that were or recognized as philosophers?
I mean, there was the pre-Socratics. They were even called the pre-Socratics. And then Socrates is like, hey, you guys have just been waiting for me. You call yourself the pre-Socratics. You never even knew. But that's because of me coming along.
Thales. Was Thales? Does he count?
Yes, but it is Thales. I know we've talked about this before. And you're fucking wrong. It's not Thales. Parmenides. Heraclitus. Okay. Heraclitus.
Okay.
There are many.
We can have fun with Greek names, too.
So do we feel like our legacy is cemented now? Is that what was going on? We've now created that scene, and now it is, you know, going to be collected in your collected works, in your best of. Are you going to put that on your reel?
In the canon, I think costuming would go a long way to help that scene. There's some really pretentious costuming.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Director pants and...
a lot of miming.
This director refuses to speak because speaking is a tool of the man, is a tool of the oppressor. So they only communicate in mime.
Were there a lot of gestures on The Apprentice? Like, I've never watched it, but I imagine that he's just constantly doing.
There were the host. How about the host? They're a jester, huh?
They had, I could have sworn they had a comedian or two. Like, wasn't Kathy Griffin, who
oh wow
now is his mortal enemy, wasn't she originally?
the whole Celebrity Apprentice thing, and they got
that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
they had some comedic presences. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all the businesses that grew out of that. I don't know. Is that the point? Is it like a Shark Tank thing where everybody that was had a good idea on The Apprentice became a titan of industry? That's where we have our today's Rockefellers. It's like American Idol is what I'm imagining, and having never seen the show, is that all of the stars of today started on American Idol, and all of the business tycoons of today started on The Apprentice.
Well, I think it's leaning a lot on that wish fulfillment that we all have to some degree or another, or we wouldn't be sitting here doing a podcast.
There's that show, I saw the listing and a commercial for it, The 1%, that's hosted by Patton Oswalt.
Okay.
And I think you're getting like IQ questions or something like that. The snippet they showed was, it showed a design of like a four, or it looked like overlaying things. And it said, how many actual lines are there here? And you sort of an optical illusion. You have to look at it and figure out. And then, you know, in less than 30 seconds, they say seven, and it shows people guessing things wrong or whatever. But I guess this is me inferring. I have no idea. I'm guessing it's to check your IQ to see if you belong in the 1%. So it's like, oh, like yeah, a little bit like Jeopardy, but maybe
not more accessible.
You're solving problems, I think. That's what I gathered from the commercial.
I think that's just one of the rapidly released shows post-debate, where they're basically put all these people and just they put them on all the networks and they put them 24 hours a day, where they sort of put you on the spot, like, explain this in 1 minute. And then when you fumble around, I don't know. Then they show that alongside Biden and just say like, Biden's just one of you guys. You couldn't do this shit either. So you sound like you're 92.
Of course. I knew it.
I mean, that's not a bad idea. I think.
You mentioned intent earlier, Mark, and the philosophy of intent. I bet the ancients talked about intent, but did they understand impact?
Did they have performance measures? I don't think they had, when they were like, what is going to be the impact of the teaching of the true philosophy? If you can't quantify it, basically, you got nothing, right? That's how you measure impacts.
If you can't measure it, then it doesn't exist. That's kind of true, I guess, isn't it?
The exit polls? What impacts?
Well, I was trying to get the philosophy going again, because you had mentioned intent earlier. And it got me thinking about that does happen a lot in today's society, at least, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of talk about just because you had good intentions, that doesn't excuse you for causing someone pain or causing, you know, the whole intent impact dichotomy was in popular culture for a while. And
I mean, maybe we're just all self-absorbed. Danny, when you, on your list of things that you're trying to get around to, how much are you thinking about the impact? What does it matter if I get finished this book? Like millions of people, or how much does this play into it?
I guess self-betterment, which affects no one, absolutely. Even some of the writing stuff, like it feels good to have done it. I'm working on this big, basically a screenplay is what I'm working on. I've written a couple half ones or third ones. I've never completed one. And I'm finally like, actually, I'm going to be able to finish this. But it's been a lot of work. And what am I going to get out of it? I mean, in a fantasy world, oh, I'll sell it. But the reality is, no, that's not going to happen. I don't know. Patting myself on the back, it's not helping anyone. Selfish, I guess. Yeah, selfish.
You never know when one of those conceptual edify is going to end up being the lodestone, the foundation for some future civilization. That's something that you come up with involving the Dukes of Hazzard or Cops on Ice or whatever it is that you're talking about that particular week. You don't know. It might
become something.
Become
something. I did have, talking about reality shows, an audition for a reality show where you would solve a mystery. A bunch of contestants. And I think it ran for one season and was kind of horrible. Saw a handful of episodes, but the audition. They called you in and asked you some questions. You know, who are you? What do you? And I wasn't supposed to let on that I was an actor. They told me that, like, and again, of very little renown. It would take a lot of Google searching to figure out that quote unquote truth. Don't let on that you're involved in the improv community. Great. And they're like, well, why do you think you'd be good at mystery? Well, I love reading mysteries, you know, with Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie, you know, and play a lot of board games, like strategy games and things. And, okay. Do you ever watch CSI? Like, oh, I've seen a few episodes, but it's not really my favorite. How about CSI Miami? No.
Oh, the guy that one. No, not normal one. CSI.
I watch far more CSI Miami than regular CSI. And don't get me started on the NCIS New Orleans.
Got a tattoo.
This guy asked me with like a straight face. Okay. Well, how about CSI Miami? You know, and like, I couldn't believe that. It's ridiculous.
And if you are on a reality show that does air, this would be your legacy.
Yep.
And that's it. The stupid things that you said and the moments that they chose to put together for you, for 99% of the people who will ever know your name, that would be why.
Mm-hmm. That's the guy who lost week one of the mystery show.
Because he was such an asshole. Everybody voted him off.
He fell when he was walking down the stairs and knocked into people.
Do you know how people were eliminated from the mystery show? Or
so every week there would be a crime that they would have to solve. And then they would have to present their theory to the judges about what happened. But they quickly found out that no one was even getting close to the what actually happened. So they would heavily edit the presentations of their theory and be like, well, we all know when we walked in and saw Jordan on the floor, cut to, well, how did it? You know, another contestant. And no one, they never showed a full contestant's theory because none of them were even close to what actually happened. The judges would be like, well, this person was closest or closer. I think in their minds, they had this idea of people always solving it and just, you know, untangling the riddle and the mystery, but no one did.
That's hilarious that they made it so hard that they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Did you know anyone who made it on the show?
No, it didn't last very long.
It remained forever a mystery.
Yes. And it's the kind of thing, too, where the person at home, of course, can play along. And a couple of episodes I saw, I was like, well, I saw all the clues because the camera is focusing on the clues. And like, you know, it's this whole kind of thing where it's like,
yeah,
someone was attacked by a tiger, allegedly, but actually they had been poisoned before the tiger attacked them.
Sure.
You know, and you're supposed to know because the letters CN were written on a chalkboard in the kitchen, which is cyanide. You know, it's just like,
what a terrible gun. He wants us to find who did it.
Yeah. Ooh, but aren't all serial killers that way? They secretly want to be discovered, don't they? Don't they?
I think the serial killer just likes to mock the cops. You can't catch me.
Yes. Ha
ha ha. I'm too wily for you. I'm going to leave some really puzzling, a locket of someone's hair that's not the victim's. And you're going to have to figure that out. What do you think of that? And I'll even put a sign that says, lock of someone's hair. I don't want you to miss it.
I love some serial killer who leaves cryptic coded messages for the police. But they get more and more complex to the point where he stops killing people because he can't come up with any more complex things. It's like the urge to kill is just brimming over right now, but I can't think of a new code to leave for the...
Or the cops never guess any of them. They never realize there is a code being left.
It's so easy. It's so easy.
And so we have to just keep making it easier and easier.
He emails like the actual code thing to break the code. Like, oh,
here's the key.
Here's how you break it. Okay, X, X, Z. That's equal to A.
Yeah.
Still don't get it.
I'm going to leave the yellow highlighter so that when you need a clue, you can just fill out this part and then it'll tell you part of it.
Yeah. The police have a new announcement, a break in the case. They have solved one of the codes. It says, stop me before I pill again. So, police are baffled. I gave you the key. Why are you messing this up? I don't understand. Yeah.
So that's a legacy if you're a serial killer.
Yes.
I'm sure they...
Unless you're Zodiac.
Think about... I mean, then you've left a pretty big legacy. Except, did he even come up with that appellation? Like, you'd think you want to control your own branding. I don't want people to give me a serial killer name. I want to come up with my own. I mean, Zodiac's pretty cool. That's why I'm...
Yeah.
Son of Sam, that's cool.
But what if the police had just purposely came up like the dog shit killer?
What? Come on, no!
Had nothing to do with...
Come on, yeah.
Had nothing to do with dogs.
Every murder shows that it was just a knife that was pushed in just barely. So we're going to call this the weakling killer.
Yeah.
No!
The weenie loser crybaby killer.
We found tears at the site.
Yeah.
What a crybaby.
We dare you to kill again. We dare you to kill again. Stop doing that. Stop encouraging him.
We dare you to make it more brutal next time and use a stronger right hook.
Yeah. Please go on a killing rampage. Please. Pretty please with sugar on top. You loser. Yeah. Police chief fired today after.
Serial killer turns himself in. Just an emotional tear fest needing a hug.
And they called me a loser, and they said I couldn't kill more people, and it really mean to me.
I didn't want that kind of attention.
Yeah, because he is a loner and mostly kept to himself, as they always say about serial killers.
Or he was just an everyday guy. I never would have suspected. He went to the church picnics. He would bring along some hors d'oeuvres. Some usually homemade, not even store-bought.
Quite delicious. Quite delicious.
Deviled eggs. Fantastic.
The deviled egg killer.
Of course. Of course. Deviled egg. Yes.
Because just because of after the fact, you find out that they're like,
yes,
that it just becomes like one of those random when you come up with, yes, a big tuna or whatever, your work nickname that is based on nothing.
Yes. He scoops out their guts and purees them and lays them on top of the body.
Well, that would be a deserved nickname.
A sprinkle of paprika on top.
The paprika killer. Got it.
The devil egg killer. Come on. What do I have to do? Yeah.
I mean, that John Wayne Gacy, his place had such a rusty doorknob. We're going to call him the rusty doorknob killer. Was there anything else remarkable, Edwin? You know, dressed like a clown? No, just a rusty doorknob. Did he kill with the doorknob? No. No, he just had one.
There was that one, the BTK killer.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of a, you know.
Every time it was like Burger King. The Burger King. No, BTK.
Yeah.
But I was like, incredible
marketing. I'm not having a Whopper again. Now you, I don't want to get the BTK. I don't want the BK killer coming after me.
Did he place Burger King wrappers and things around every victim? Was there some,
mm-hmm,
you know,
I don't know.
You can't buy that.
Police call him the BK killer, so I'm not going back there ever again.
Killing on behalf of Burger King, killing people associated with Burger King.
I mean, he loves that chicken sandwich.
They got rid of the original chicken sandwich. That's what it was. They got rid of it with us.
Originally motivated by Burger King. I okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a guy coming in. He's just all sweaty. He's having to have 3 days of beard growth. Just like, I need an original chicken sandwich. I'm sorry, sir. We've discontinued them. What? That was it. One killing rampage later.
If you can name after the causes of their murder, I mean, can you just name neglected child killer? Not that the person kills neglected children. Just he was a neglected child. I mean, it's a pretty safe bet. And then everybody, you know, you want to make people sympathize with the killer. Couldn't help himself killer.
I have heard that there is a trend with the media and criminologists that they don't want to name the killers after their names, because then that name will live on, you know, John Wayne Gacy and you know, and Ted Bundy. And like, they're just going to give them we refer to them by not by their first name. So they don't receive any kind of immortality, you know, that their name won't live on. Like, that's intentional.
What if it's a humble killer? It's like, hey, I don't want credit for this. It's just all about the killing for me.
It's just about the killing.
I don't need a legacy.
It's just about the killing and the sexual gratification I receive after killing, which is intense.
No clues. I'm just killing people, plain and simple.
I mean, I would think that kind of person should do something in a more ephemeral art form. Like, you know, killing a person is very final. If you could do it in a virtual environment, kill as many people as you want. It's in the wind. You could kill sandcastles. You could be a sandcastle killer.
I thought you meant like wear virtual goggles
while killing the actual people. I mean,
yeah, like you feel like you're stabbing, and it's like, no, it's just the new Google glasses or what have you.
Ooh, I get all my aggression out.
Yeah,
oh, I feel great. Boy, I went to the VR cafe and strapped in and killed some people, committed some sexual assaults, and I feel great. Wow, got it all out of my system.
Yeah, tomorrow I go to the Zeta sorority house. ZTA is gonna take them out. Really excited. Now to go to a productive day of work.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the Mazes and Monsters virtual VR game would be so that you can be like Tom Hanks when he thought the homeless guy was an ogre and killed that guy, that we could have everybody doing that, going around.
Spoiler alert, Mark. Wow.
A lot of people were about to watch the early Tom Hanks TV movie, Mazes and Monsters, because that's what you show to your kids when they show signs of wanting to play Dungeons and Dragons, because you want to...
That'll stop them.
Scratch that off my list.
Yeah. Wow, is Dungeons and Dragons this dated and slow? Mm-hmm. Yep, this is a good representation. This isn't cool at all. Yeah, everybody's got weird hair, don't they? And wears funny clothes. You're not going to want to get involved with Dungeons and Dragons.
I mean, on the other hand, be like Tom Hanks. If you could be like Tom Hanks for a day, but it's the day in which you mistakenly kill people on the street thinking that they're monsters, would you go for it?
Yeah.
And everyone keeps recognizing, hey, it's Tom Hanks.
The Tom Hanks killer. Not that he killed Tom Hanks or...
Yeah.
It's just, reenacting the classic Tom Hanks scene.
I can see that being a Twilight Zone episode about, like, you get to be Cindy Crawford for a day, or,
the day of Cindy Crawford's death.
Angelina Jolie, but it's like the day they had horrible gastroenteritis and are just like in bed and on the toilet all day, just feeling miserable. Oh, I'm Angelina Jolie, but I'm just crapping my guts out. This is horrible.
Worst episode of Quantum Leap ever, that transported inside somebody just so that they don't have to experience that gastrointestinal distress.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Gulp. Uh-oh. Oh, yeah.
What am I supposed to do in this body today? Just get through it, man. Just get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay close to the bathroom.
Sometimes the agency just gets a request. Can you please? I really don't want to have gone through March 22nd. Can you please quantum leap somebody in my body?
That's a good service.
Yeah. In this episode, you were a downed World War II fighter pilot behind enemy lines who ate some bad mayonnaise. Yeah. Just be in this French farmhouse just trying to find a place to crap. That's pretty much. Don't get caught. Yeah.
Did the individuals leapt? Did they feel, I haven't seen Quantum Leap in a long time, a responsibility to the integrity of the people's lives who they were in, such that, because I would, if I knew I was only in somebody's body for a day, I would not have any qualms about crapping in places that, as in my human body, I would not do that. I would not just want to crap in the street in front of a crowd. But if it's not my body, it's just like strangers.
Yeah. I think his character was kind of moral. But, if he's back in time or just in strange eras where, society's rules are different, you have to conform with those rules and be, it's like, oh, people are going to suspect if I don't really amp up my sexist game or, how do I hide in
this 1950s? Yeah. I got to say more N-words. More N-words than I already say.
No, thank you is the only N-word I say to that.
I don't care what your intent is. The impact.
Yeah. Cause then you quantum leap back to the present and you realize you totally changed the past. And now the N-word is everywhere. I don't know what of your failing to say the N-word when you went back in the past of what
is the Streisand effect.
Yeah. The butterfly effect.
Where did he refuse to repeat? Yeah.
Barbara Streisand went back in time and killed a butterfly. What?
Exactly. The Troub Streisand effect.
So I think it's fine that we didn't do a secret improv scene because we've basically been doing the Maximum Party Zone thing. We zeroed in on it. I don't know if I was doing it quite right, but it seems like with that, that's sort of the formula, right? Of what you guys do.
Coming up with an idea, some kind of thing, and then deconstructing it and reconstructing it with ridiculous ways.
A form of improv that perhaps people didn't think of before, didn't even know was a possibility. It's like you guys are breaking grounds in the possibilities of discourse.
I'm not going to push back against that.
That might be our new podcast name.
I need to write that down. What was the castles of
breaking grounds?
Conceptual edify.
Conceptual edify.
Delicious,
Danny. When we hit the end like this, we have to say, did philosophy, did the thinking about legacy and plans and all that stuff and wherever the hell that went, was that the more profound point made here, or? Was it, there's a whole new kind of improv in the world, the thing that you guys do? Or I don't know, Bill, was there any supplementary comments about the improv you want to make?
I think that's fine. I'm not going to push back against any of that.
You're the judge. Philosophy or improv today?
or the new conceptual edify that the MPZ podcast resides upon.
Yeah, that's strong, wherever that lies. Although you did throw out several philosophers' names, and I think I recognize almost all of them, except for one or two, but I don't really know what they are.
Heraclitus? You know that one?
No, that one definitely did not. When you mentioned the more modern ones, I was like, okay. And then you started to lose me.
You never have the same orgasm twice. I think that's Heraclitus's philosophy.
Oh.
Yes. The water is different. The river is the same, but the water is different.
That's all you need to know. All right. Well, I mean, I think our work is done here. Really good to meet you, Danny.
Nice to meet you as well.
Yes.
Thank you for teaching me about Heraclitus.
This was fun, Mark.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Thanks for being on the show, Danny. And podbean.com, you can find the MPZ Listening Party.
Sweet. Also on Spotify.
Also on Spotify.
But not on Apple Podcasts still, strangely. Is that still a thing? Well,
they're weird, and they want to, like, there's like a 2-week waiting period before they'll post anything. It's weird.
If it's going to be 2 weeks, then fuck it. I'm not going to apply at all.
Yeah. No, thank you. It's on right, YouTube we'll, as well.
We'll see how that somewhere. Goes as a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, say so long. Bye, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this, get more at philosophyimprov.com. If you're hearing this on the Partially Examined Life feed, please go subscribe directly to the Philosophy vs. Improv podcast so you won't miss any episodes. And you'll see our whole back catalog of episodes in that feed. While you're on the Apple Podcasts site subscribing, please leave a nice rating and review of this podcast. Better yet, avoid all the ads. Here are post-game discussions for nearly every episode, and experience the video for this and most other recent episodes at patreon.com/philosophyimprov. Thanks so much for listening. Bankrupt.